Just like that, we're back with the Buffer Podcast. We have missed all of you fine people. There's so much going on and so much to talk about, and a fantastic Buffer battle awaits you on this episode. Thank you for checking the show out. If you found us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor.fm, however you found us, we appreciate it, and we welcome you to the Buffer. My name is Tony Tone.
I'm Joel Krausar.
And Joel, it's August. School starts soon, but for whatever reason, and maybe I just don't remember the fact that there's so much content in August. I don't know if that's the case, or if we're finally hitting that point where we had all that log jam of content that was paused, completed, but not ready to be released because of the pandemic. But there are so many different things coming out in the next 3 weeks. It's wild.
Yeah, I think that that's the thing. I think a lot of things that got put on hold are now coming out, and we're reaping the benefits of it after being able to, or not being able to get to the theater for so long. And I know that there's some, if things are back up in the air a little bit in some parts of the country, but I think people still are trying to be entertained, and they're trying to get the theaters back and engaged.
Yeah. We just saw this week that Warner Brothers and AMC struck a deal that will basically put the Warner Brothers 2022 slate in theaters first on a shortened window before it goes to HBO Max, which is interesting. And we'll talk about Warner Brothers HBO Max in just a minute. So this week, you've got a big summer Ryan Reynolds movie on Friday the 13th, and we'll have coverage of Free Guy later in the week. Personally, I'm really excited for Don't Breathe 2. Don't Breathe 1 was really, really well done with Stephen Lang. And then there's a movie called Bios with Tom Hanks. And I don't want to leave out perhaps one of the biggest performances of the year, Jennifer Hudson doing Aretha Franklin in Respect. And Joel, you seem to think that she may have a chance to win another Academy Award.
Well, I think there's just a track record, obviously, for people who, you know, going all the way back to, you know, Ray, Jamie Foxx. And then Stephen Hawking, what's his name? Totally drawn a blank on the actor's name.
Ethan Hawke?
No. When Stephen Hawking, the theory of everything, the actor who played Stephen Hawking. So what I'm saying is that the people who transform into a historical figure in recent history have taken home the Academy Award. Rami Malek in as Freddie Mercury being the most recent. But the biggest thing is, I think that Jennifer Hudson is probably the closest thing that we've ever had to Aretha Franklin vocally. And I know that her estate was very insistent that Jennifer Hudson be the one who sings the historical revelation that is Aretha Franklin. And I'm just looking forward to seeing it, because she truly was just a freak of nature, and Jennifer Hudson's very close to that as well. Little known fact: yours truly auditioned for American Idol the same season that that Jennifer Hudson did, and for the executive producer round, I didn't actually make it to the final three, but for the executive producer round, I was three people behind Jennifer Hudson in line.
Wow!
And we could all hear her singing in the room in front of us. And I just looked at the person next to me and I said, yep, we don't have a chance against this person.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So that's
she's my super talented.
It sounds like she's just a tremendous person to work with too. So I'm looking forward to Respect. I'm really looking forward to Free Guy. And I think we're going to get to see that together maybe on Thursday. So
yeah, that'll be fun. Ryan Reynolds trapped inside a video game, and then shenanigans follow. Like, you can't go wrong with that. Also new this week on Netflix is Vivo. Next week, August 20th, you've got The Night House, Paw Patrol the movie, The Protege, that has Michael Keaton in it, Reminiscent, which is in theaters and HBO Max with Hugh Jackman, Sweet Girl with Jason Momoa is on Netflix next week, and then heading towards the end of the month, August 27th, Candyman in theaters. Really looking forward to that. Jordan Peele produced, looks really good, kind of like one of those movies that I've seen one trailer and I was like, that's enough. Like, that looks really intense. I don't want to know anymore. I don't want to spoil it for myself. I probably saw the original Candyman movies when I was too young. Thanks, Dad. But I am excited to see this rebirth, if you will.
Never saw it.
Oh my gosh.
I don't like those kind of movies. I'm scared of them.
They're so good. Well, that's what they do. I mean, this one looks phenomenal.
I definitely stood in a middle school bathroom, though. One of my jack wagon friends turned the lights off and said Candyman into the mirror 3 times.
Yeah, you don't want to do that, or the bloody, you know what? You don't want to do those. Like, I'm not saying, like, I don't know if it's going to actually happen, but I just don't want to do it. But I can appreciate a Candyman movie. It looks just really good. Also, August 27th, He's All That on Netflix. Interesting. He's All That. I don't know anything about it,
but I'm sure it's terrible.
But She's All That, but we'll see. And then Vacation Friends on Hulu, August 27th, with Lil Rel Howery and John Cena. So kind of an interesting pairing there, as John Cena continues to enjoy success. And this week in the buffer battle, we will have Mr. John Cena make an appearance, because this week's battle pits, the Suicide Squad, not to be confused with Suicide Squad from a few years ago, against Val. The documentary.
It's funny that you spelled Suicide Squad Suckicide Squad.
Oh, I did spell it wrong, didn't I?
That just makes me laugh.
I wonder why I didn't correct it.
I don't know. Maybe that's in your dictionary from the last, the previous Suicide Squad. I would describe that as the Suckicide Squad.
So Joel's going to make the case for the Suicide Squad, which is in theaters and on HBO Max. We've both seen it. And I'll be interested to hear your thoughts, because I may have an unpopular take.
We both have seen both of these, which it's always better when we have. But sometimes it doesn't work in our schedules to do so. But this week, the Suicide Squad, I watched it the night it hit HBO Max. And I couldn't have enjoyed it more. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it, because the first iteration was so bad, so dark. I'm not here for the Jared Leto Joker. I'm not here for the Will Smith Deadeye character. It's such an interesting premise, and it was one of the comic book premises, comic books that I actually read as a kid. I wasn't completely immersed in it, but those were the ones I picked up. If I went to the comic book store with my friends, that's what I would buy. I would either buy a Wolverine comic or a Suicide Squad. And I just think it's such a fertile storyline. All of these, criminals with nothing to lose being basically extorted into executing covert operations for, shadow government operations. And really the possibilities are endless for this franchise if you really want to go all in and have multiple sequels. And it was just executed so poorly the first time. But they were smart, and they rescued James Gunn out of Marvel exile after his scandal from some of his social media tweets and social media posts and getting canceled. From the jump, a James Gunn movie is going to entertain you. When Folsom Prison Blues starts rolling through as the opening scene starts, you just immediately know that this is going to be fun. It's going to be a James Gunn romp. And unlike the Guardians movies, the Guardians of the Galaxy movies in the Marvel Universe, he was given carte blanche to be as graphic, as violent, and as really almost graphic novel-y as he wanted to be. I felt like some of it was Sin City-like. It was almost had a little bit of a Frank Miller aesthetic to it.
I could see that.
And with his mastery of using the soundtrack and using music, it wasn't to the level of Guardians of the Galaxy as far as the music being a character in the movie. But it was just, it was so good. And Idris Elba just kills it. He is so good as Bloodsport. And I grew up with a mother who absolutely is petrified of rats. And subsequently, I'm not a huge fan of rodents because of that osmosis as a child. But you fall in love with this CGI rat. There's a character who's Sebastian the Rat, and he's lovable. I also really liked how they kind of started with alternating timelines and then merged them all together, so you actually saw how it all worked. And I thought that was a really creative way to tell this story. You know, they're going to this, you know, island nation of, was it Costa Mayor or something like that. And there's a facility there that is a shadow government facility that some sort of extraterrestrial experiments are being held, and the Suicide Squad's job is to go in and destroy. And it benefited from having such a really simple storyline. And what carried this movie, in my opinion, is the performance of the chemistry between John Cena and Idris Elba. Gosh, I don't know how much more tread on the tires Margot Robbie has as Harley Quinn, but she's very comfortable in that character. And I was not a fan of Birds of Prey. I thought it was better, obviously, than the first Suicide Squad. But she is not the problem with Birds of Prey and the first Suicide Squad. And she gets a chance, I think, to redeem herself with this. And I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I'm sure there's lots that's imperfect about it from a DC Universe standpoint. But it exceeded my expectations, but I'll say that my expectations were pretty low going in.
I thought it was interesting, and it wasn't really a bait and switch, but certainly in all the press, and it was smart, in all the press for the Suicide Squad, you saw Pete Davidson and you saw, you know, the return of Captain Boomerang and Jai Courtney. And essentially what happens is, spoiler alert, this is a spoiler alert. What happens is the movie begins, and then the first squad goes to this island and they just get eviscerated. Like, they all get just killed basically right away, except for Joel Kinnaman's character, Rick Flagg, and Margot Robbie, I think, were the only two that survived until the very end. Spoiler alert, when we see that Weasel comes back to life. But I thought that was interesting. And then it shifts right away to this different team, and that's where your Bloodsport and your Peacemaker and your Ratcatcher are. And that, I'll be honest, I was confused for like half of a second. And then it made sense as I recalled seeing a little bit more press and some posters, and you could kind of see the focal point shift to, really, to Joel's point, Ratcatcher, Bloodsport, Peacemaker certainly is going to have his own HBO Max series, John Cena, Polka Dot Man. And that was kind of, and of course, Harley Quinn.
Well, King Shark too, we can't forget. And
Sylvester Stallone is King Shark.
So good.
So the things that I like about James Gunn, and I remember the James Gunn trauma, like Tromeo and Juliet stuff way back in the day, when they, for whatever reason, would play on like E! Entertainment News. So James Gunn really had a chance to let this movie breathe. And I appreciate that, but I still would, and I'm not the guy that typically says a movie's too long. I like the runtime of the Suicide Squad. I just thought that some of the sequences were a little too breathy, if you'll have it. Like, he could have tightened a couple of things up. I think he really wanted to give Margot Robbie like her just due with this Harley Quinn, because to your point, the first Suicide Squad, and it's really poor David Ayers, he completed a film and then it was totally taken from him and edited into the mess of a movie that we had a couple of years ago. So James Gunn definitely was doing some service for Margot Robbie, and really for Joel Kinnaman, as his Rick Flagg was certainly a lot better in this movie. But overall, I don't know. I just, you know, is it too violent for the sake of being violent? Is the violence supposed to be tongue in cheek and taken as more of like over the top? I mean, King Shark rips a person in half. They battle a giant starfish.
It was a live action cartoon. That's how I kind of describe it. And I'm okay with that. The comedy of the scene where they are sneaking up on the camp to rescue Rick Flag, and it turns out that they're freedom fighters, so they didn't realize that they were not that threats. Was good. But the whole, like, it's almost like a Dueling Banjos moment between Bloodsport and Peacemaker, where they're, you know, killing. They're just showing off their killing prowess, and it was just really. The other thing is one of the challenges with movies like this is you have this, let's get the gang together, like, philosophy, and sometimes it's done perfectly right. Like, I think of the movie The Replacements, the football movie with Gene Hackman, where they're assembling the team, and you've got the sumo wrestler, you've got the deaf tight end, and Gene Hackman's giving you all of the attributes of all of these different players, and it's paced well, and it's quick, and it's successful. There are movies that fail miserably at that, and they've usually been comic book movies that have had a failure, and I'm drawing a blank on a perfect example of this. But with this movie,
Justice League,
that's the best example of it.
The non-Zack Snyder cut, to be clear.
And this movie didn't even try to do it. It just assembled everybody, and you kind of learned everybody's attributes as you went along. Polka Dot Man being the most perfect example of that. And so they just didn't have any fluff in this. And I know the runtime could have maybe been a minute shorter or two, or maybe 5 or 6 minutes shorter, but the pacing was good, and you didn't get bogged down with super complex world domination plot, which I think a lot of these movies can struggle with. And you didn't have a big Thanos type enemy. The enemy was this.
Yeah, you knew the big bad would be taken out in this.
Right.
You know that the stakes are high, and they do a good job building to the crescendo, the climax of the film.
Speaking of climax, how about the Harley Quinn just offing one of the military members after a climax, if you will?
Yeah,
like, it was great. And then they've got her hanging from the she's being tortured, and then she escapes. That was one of the more entertaining scenes or sequences. And then they're trying to break her out, and she had already broken herself out. What was your whole take on the big bad, the giants?
The Starro thing? Starfish? It was okay. I like the premise.
I like how they called it a kaiju.
I'll be the first to admit that, like, the source material of the Suicide Squad comics is not something that I'm familiar with. So I appreciate the fact that James Gunn's approach, kind of like what he did with Guardians, is like he assumes that it's fan service. Like, he assumes that you know these characters, and even if you don't, and you're not super well versed, he's like you said, he's going to bring you up to speed really quick, whether it's backstory or just really good defined character introductions. So then you're like, oh yeah, okay, cool. Polka Dot Man makes sense, and they're taking on this giant Starro, and then there's the dude in the lab with the that looks like Pinhead from Punisher with things sticking out of his head. Like, he kind of, I thought he could have done more or less. I don't know. I don't want to say that I dislike the Suicide Squad, because I don't. And the Rotten Tomatoes score right now is 91%. It debuted at 100, and the reviews are very favorable. What is really surprising is the box office. So opening weekend, like $26 million. And you have to look at that being directly tied to the HBO Max release. And I don't know, I think both of us are comfortable saying that we watched the Suicide Squad on HBO Max. Would I have enjoyed it more in the theaters? Possibly, but I don't think it really did them any favors with the same day streaming. Now, that being said, I, as a consumer with young kids and a job, I love the ability to watch new releases on my TV or on my phone or my devices. But man, Joel, it doesn't seem like it's helping these, because I don't know if a suicide, like, let's put it this way. I think it's going to be really tough for the Suicide Squad to have like a second wind or a second big weekend. Like, it may be number one, maybe it'll beat Free Guy by a couple bucks, but I don't know, because Free Guy's in theaters only and Suicide Squad is in both places. So that to me is concerning, because obviously Warner Brothers invests a lot of money in this. They invest a lot in James Gunn. And if they don't have that return, you know, I don't know what that means for the future of Suicide Squad, the franchise. Certainly they're not going to walk away from James Gunn, because he's got a lot of respect and a good following, but I'll be curious to see what happens on the business side of it.
I fully anticipate this year kind of being viewed as an anomaly still. I mean, August is typically not where you put your big box office performers anyway, in the old traditional model. And I think this year it's going to be, let's test the waters. Let's see what works. And we'll go from there. So I'm not reading too much into how they will react to box office numbers in this 2021 year, just because of how messed up 2020 was. And I don't know how the streaming deals are negotiated or what have you, but I'm guessing that if they can show performance on the streaming side, that moving forward, if this model is continued, they're going to figure out ways to capitalize on that end of it. So I'm not, that part doesn't concern me. It doesn't alarm me. It's concerning, but it's not alarming, if that makes sense.
All right. So the Suicide Squad, it's in theaters, it's on HBO Max, and it could not be any more different than what I'm entering into the battle this week on the buffer. And that is Val, the very powerful documentary that covers the life of the great actor Val Kilmer. And it's on Amazon Prime Video. And I remember very clearly seeing the first trailer for Val. And I felt like I had kind of kept maybe a half of a tab on Val Kilmer. I knew that he had some health issues. I knew he was always kind of eclectic. I had heard the rumors that he was quote unquote difficult on sets, which didn't turn out to be true. And then I started watching Val, and it just was like a punch in the stomach. Like, it's so powerful. It's so well done. Val Kilmer's son is the narrator.
I was not expecting to cry when I fired this thing up.
How does his son, and I know that that's a thing, but does his kid not sound, his kid Jack Kilmer, exactly like Val? I mean, it's...
Well, they don't tell you at the beginning that it's his son narrating.
Jack is 26 years old.
Yeah, they don't tell you
at the beginning. No, you think it's Val Kilmer, yeah, and then you quickly realize, like, yeah.
And then he says, you know, he talks about throat cancer, and he says that he still can't speak normally, and then they go to him and he's, you know, got the vibrating pen to manipulate his larynx, and
it was intense. I wasn't prepared for, like, I think it's a plastic tube, and then he has to, like,
yeah, it's called a stoma.
I think he puts his, like, finger over the hole. I didn't see an electric pen. It was more just like, I don't know, man.
Maybe I was just assuming it was the old way to do that, but so
Val Kilmer has this amazing story, and it's very personal, and it's a beautifully well done documentary. And the guy just had video cameras all the time back in the day. He was the guy on the set of movies and theatrical productions that was constantly taping things. And what I was surprised about, and things that I didn't know, is his affinity for the stage. And that's where he really got his start. And if you would have asked Val Kilmer what probably was the most rewarding work he got to do, it's, you know, it was in the last 10 years when he was portraying Mark Twain, which is kind of what the documentary builds to, spoiler alert, is he was in the midst of this really powerful one-man show where he kind of embodied in character Mark Twain, and then that kind of got interrupted when his health challenges started. So really amazing documentary. One of the best that I've seen in a long time.
See, I hadn't done a deep dive on Kilmer's career. I had no idea that he grew up was it Gene Autry's ranch? It was one of the, you know, the famous cowboys ranches.
I think that's right. Yeah.
And I had no idea that he went to Juilliard. to study. Right. And he was one of the youngest ever admitted into the Juilliard acting program. I didn't know Kelly McGillis went to Juilliard either. Like, that was, if you had told me that two of the main characters in the movie Top Gun, like,
you learned so much about this guy.
And it was just amazing how he had had all this footage, how he had kept this video camera, these cameras rolling the entire time. And he had all this amazing footage, you know, the scene where they were on the set of Top Gun, or in a trailer of Top Gun, and they're reading all of their press clippings, because they all were budding their careers. You know, Anthony Edwards had just come off Revenge of the Nerds. Tom Cruise was just in Risky Business. Kilmer was just in Real Geniuses. And this whole emergence, Tony Scott got so lucky having all these brilliant young actors to drive that movie and to feed that. Like, it was... I was young when Val Kilmer was getting started, so like my recollection is really just Top Gun to Ghost in the Darkness to The Saint to MacGruber. I mean, he has such an eclectic career, like you said, but the thing that was so moving to me was that his passion and his real commitment to the craft of acting. I don't think if you look at some of his work, you thought, oh, you know, this is a guy who really is trained to be a juggernaut in this profession. But sometimes you just got to take the job, right? So Top Secret, that's a blockbuster opportunity. You go take that job being silly.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was necessarily pigeonholed, because then he gets The Doors. I mean, that's one of those performances where I think he thought he was Jim Morrison.
Yeah, he had the Jim Carrey, Andy Kaufman moment, and The Doors ended up costing him his marriage, which is like one of those things that, you know, I think for a documentary like this, it's always the personal relationships and the connections and the vulnerability that compel me to just, I mean, I couldn't stop watching it. Like, I think I had to stop it twice just because of kids and life, but man, I was just so compelled by every moment of this story, and it is a really good story. And you're right, Joel, you know, he has a very big heart for the arts and painting, and I love how they incorporated his kind of, you know, scrapbook diary into the cinematography as like you would turn a page to a different chapter. Nobody's a bigger Batman fan than I am. And holy cow, I didn't realize his experience was so bad on that. Like, I felt bad, because he basically said like, hey, I was miserable. I was in this suit. I couldn't see, I couldn't hear, I couldn't turn. And then this movie is just about Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey. And you're just like, wow, I was 12 when that came out, Batman Forever. And I thought you did a fine job. And I had kind of remembered that he opted obviously to not do Batman and Robin, and George Clooney stepped in, but I thought Val Kilmer was a very good Bruce Wayne. And I think if you look at that movie again, Joe, what is interesting is that I think his Bruce Wayne is probably up there in the top performance. Now I'm not talking about the Batman performance, because it is what it is, but he really put it his best. And I know he kind of made fun of some of his hand gestures and like calling it like soap opera, but like he really cared about acting, and you could see that in that performance. I also want to say I forgot how good The Saint was.
It's a great movie.
I certainly know that he's in Tombstone. But wow, yeah, it was just kind of nice to relive Val Kilmer's his IMDb, if you will, like his filmography. And if you're a fan, if you're not a fan, if you're novice, if you just know him from any one of those movies, Val is for you, because at the heart of it is the story about a guy, his life, his love of capturing the moment, his family, his health. And that really shocks people when really famous people that have been part of your life for so long have, like, I don't want to say normal health struggles, but sometimes you feel like that celebrities are immune to things like what Val Kilmer has dealt with, or Christina Applegate, and so on.
Well, I think about, you know, what if the new Marvel cartoon or animated series comes out tomorrow, I think, on Disney Plus, And I was going through doing some research on that because we're going to be talking about that later in the week. And the first thing that pops up is Chadwick Boseman did voice work for this prior to passing. And that's another example of a no one knew he was sick. And we were in the movie theater together when that news broke that he had passed. And it's just one of those things where I mentioned earlier, just kind of in passing, that this documentary actually made me cry. I actually have a benign tumor on my thyroid gland that I've had to have biopsied several times the last several years just to make sure that it's nothing. And doctors have said, like, we could, you know, do the surgery and try to remove the tumor, but most likely just remove your thyroid. But the greatest risk to that surgery is damage to my vocal cords. And you know me, I mean, I don't just talk on podcasts and broadcast sports. I mean, I'm a classically trained singer. It's a huge part of my life. I sing with my kids. I sing with my wife. You know, I sing at church. It's a huge, some people golf. I, you know, sing and sing with symphonies and stuff like that. The thought of losing that functionality and that function, I mean, that would honestly, if I lost my vocal ability, I would put me on suicide watch, because I mean, it would be that would destroy me that much. And with Kilmer, you can see where it's destroyed part of him, because he's walking around Juilliard with his son, and you know, he can barely talk, and he's, you know, trying to share this amazing experience with his son, and it's hard for him to communicate. And that's to see someone who, you know, in the 80s and 90s was such a formidable physical presence. Really, he's a fantastic character actor. But, you know, his the part where he's talking about in Top Gun, where he, you know, created this, he manifested this backstory for Iceman, that, you know, his dad left him when he was young, and that he was his striving for perfection is what made him so arrogant. Like, when you hear him explain it, it's like, man, I don't really hate Iceman so much. Like, Iceman's not as big of a jerk as I thought he was.
Yeah.
Because when you hear that, it's like, okay, I now can relate to that character a little bit better. And I can't speak for the other actors in that project, but I'm not sure that other actors were taking it that seriously throughout that movie.
Well, and it's interesting because in the Top Gun Maverick sequel that is going to come out one of these years.
This year, it's coming out this spring, I thought.
I hope so. Val Kilmer's credited as Iceman. So I don't know when that was filmed, but he'll be there. Okay, so again, you couldn't have two different pieces of content with the Suicide Squad and Val. Now, as we look at this in a battle sense, and one of these pieces of content moving on, again, the thing that we always come back to is, what's going to have the most legs? What are people going to, you know, what are people going to rewatch? What are you going to share? You know, if you're thinking about this in a workplace setting, if you're listening wherever you work and you saw both the Suicide Squad and Val, I think it can appeal to all folks. But I'm here to say, for my money, Val is so great that I want to tell everybody, and I haven't shared it on social. I wanted to, I forgot, but that's what I felt like. I felt like this is so different. It's so good. Everybody needs to see this. I'm assuming that for people that want to see the Suicide Squad, they're going to see it. So it doesn't really need me to give it a yay or nay. But I feel like, in my opinion, Val just was so much more powerful and meaningful for me.
And I was prepared to fight you on that until at about 2:00 today, one of my coworkers popped their head around the cubicle and asked me if I had seen Val yet. And wow. I said, I just watched it. And she said, don't tell me anything about it. I haven't seen it. I've got the reputation of being the movie guy around the office.
Sure.
And she said, she has a very close-knit group of, like, her husband's best friends and, like, from high school, they all kind of married one another. And so there's this really just close-knit group of, like, eight. And they are all in their range from, like, 42 to 44 in that age demographic. So prime, you know, Kilmer, you know, target in the prime of his career. They are having a dinner party this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Where they are all just going to, they're going to have dinner and then they're all going to sit down and watch this documentary together. That's how important he was to like this group of friends. And I think that's how important this documentary is to some people. And there's a real, you know, Kilmer hive out there that is happy to see this movie. And I think this documentary has really introduced to our generation, you know, a little bit younger than that, that this is not just an action hero, that this is perhaps a generational character actor that we may have taken for granted because of some of the bold choices that he made. I mean, he wasn't afraid to just kind of go be in a movie that he wanted to work with people he wanted to work with.
Yeah, the guy has some serious chops. And I'm so happy
Val's going to win.
I think I'm happy, very happy that Val wins. But again, you really can't go wrong when you talk about the Suicide Squad and James Gunn and that cast. But boy, if you haven't seen Val and you're listening to us right now, what I recommend you do is during this commercial break, you start watching Val, because we've got so many sponsors. You can watch Val and then come right back to the buffer. So start Val on Prime Video right now. Maybe it was a little bit shorter of a break. Welcome back to the Buffer Podcast. Please rate, review, subscribe, interact with us on Facebook and Twitter, and tell your friends about the Buffer Podcast, where it's all of the newest and best in streaming and theatrical releases and documentaries and comedy specials and you know, special one-off episodes and so much more fun to be had as we continue with the buffer. Now we're going to head into guilty pleasures, and there's going to be some connective tissue for me. And I'd like to go first between the buffer battle this week and my guilty pleasure. Okay.
Let it rip.
All right. So Top Gun is one of those movies that my mom loved back in the day. And my mom's cousin, Julie, was a nurse who, she's probably, I don't know, 5 to 10 years younger than my mom. Long story short, Julie used to live in California and she was super young, going to nursing school or like had just started. And she was working one day when Tom Cruise came into the hospital to visit like some sick kids. And she said he was super nice, had pictures with them, and super short. So I'm a Tom Cruise fan. I don't maybe agree with all of his beliefs and whatnot, but Top Gun is just one of those movies that like I've come across it. It's kind of like Shawshank and some of those other movies that were just on cable so much where you're like, well, there goes the next 45 minutes. So, I mean, it's kind of an obvious guilty pleasure, but like Top Gun and the Top Gun soundtrack I had on CD, or my mom had on CD back in the day. No regrets with this guilty pleasure.
It doesn't matter where you are. If you hear this, you're stopping what you're doing and you're going to watch them launch these spider planes off that aircraft carrier. It is such a brilliant opening guitar riff, that 80s synth bass and those drums. It's such an important movie in my life. And, you know, I've been to San Diego several times for work, kicking around the idea of taking the family there for a vacation. And you're there on Coronado Island where the Top Gun Academy is. And you see, sometimes you're lucky enough, you see the fighters go. You see the Navy SEALs training out in the bay. Like, it is, it's hard not to just be... It's such a military porn movie. Like, it's so much such... There wasn't a kid in the 80s who watched that movie and didn't want to have a sweet call sign and be a fighter pilot. You just wanted to be...
And I have a cousin, my mom's second cousin, that has flown F-18s and, like... Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anybody had a bigger 85 or 86, 1985, 1986 than Kenny Loggins, because he had Footloose.
Caddyshack, Footloose.
And then he gets to do the Top Gun soundtrack. And I just pulled up, I had just Googled the Top Gun soundtrack, and just seeing the cover.
Was it Berlin?
I can hold the CD in my hand. That's how vividly I remember, like, putting that in the Discman with the little speakers attached to the Discman and just jamming to Danger Zone and Mighty Wings and Berlin, Take My Breath Away.
How many times have you done said we were inverted and you do the hands thing where you show the two airplanes? Like, it's so good. And I don't know why you play beach volleyball in blue jeans, but you just do that, I guess, if you're in Top Gun. And what's so you have Jester and you have who is the Michael Ironside call sign? He was Jester. Yeah.
I don't remember, but I will say I just looked and it's, you're right, it's November 19th for Top Gun Maverick.
Tom Skerritt, is Tom Skerritt in Maverick? If he's still alive, like,
I don't know.
I just wanted Tom Skerritt to be my driver's ed teacher.
How about your guy Miles Teller and John Hamm both in Top Gun Maverick?
I'm all in for Miles Teller. You know that I'm on the Miles Teller fan club. Speaking of the connected tissue with Kenny Loggins, Miles Teller in the remake of Footloose, he does really well in that movie. I actually will ride. Maybe I should put that for my guilty pleasure of the remake of Footloose. But
you might be on an island with that.
Yeah, I probably am. It's a lonely one, but I'll hang out there with Julianne Hough all day long.
All right, what do you got? Guilty pleasure.
For my guilty pleasure, I teased this on our Facebook page a few weeks ago with a glimpse of the Slapshot Regatta scene from the from the movie She's Out of My League with that features TJ Miller and Jay Baruchel and Alice Eve. It was kind of at that tail end era of where you can kind of have the silly buddy comedy. His buddy who's like the nice married guy. There is a scene in this movie where, okay, if you have little kids listening to this podcast, we try to keep it kind of clean. I'm not going to use bad language here, but there is a scene in this movie where his buddy has to help him shave his testicles. And I have never laughed so hard in a movie theater, I think, when he takes his towel and he does like the barber shop swipe of the towel and he blows the whiskers away.
It's
those simple moments of just stupid humor that kill me, and this movie's got great elements of that. The opening pool scene where his brother and his pregnant wife or pregnant girlfriend, who's played by St. Clair is her last name, she's so funny, and then Alice Eve comes in, and it's just this. And you have the mom from That 70s Show plays Jay Baruchel's mom. I mean, the cast of this movie is good. The girl who was in Breaking Bad, the dark hair girl in season one who dies of the drug overdose, she's Alice Eve's friend in this movie. I can't believe I'm blanking all these
actors'
names.
Kristen Ritter.
Yes.
That's like, right.
Kristen, it's one of these.
Ritter. Yeah, she's so good.
It's just one of these sleeper movies that I watched it again on Netflix the other night. I'm like, this thing is, it bats 1,000. And if someone at the office is like, what movie did you watch last night? I'd be like, I watched She's Out of My League. I'm sure they would be shocked that that was my answer, but I have no shame in that being my answer. It is absolutely a guilty pleasure, and I might even watch it again tonight, because that it's one that I can watch over and over and over again.
Kind of like the epitome of a guilty pleasure, and that's why we do it. Step inside, walk this way, you and me, babe. Hey, hey, Buffer Confessionals. Here we go.
Confessions.
I think you should go first, since I went first with the pleasures, the guilty pleasures. And I'm just going to say that there's going to be a lot of disappointed people in my Buffer Confession. But that's why we have it on the show, so that you can confess to things that you haven't seen, whether it's in its entirety or you've seen half of movies or TV shows are part of things, and maybe you've lied your way through it because it comes up in conversation. But I want you to go first, because I'm prepared to get booed off the podcast.
It came up again this week in the office. I've never seen any of the Game of Thrones I've just never seen it. I don't really care to.
Yeah.
I've talked about how I don't do dragons and Middle Earth, and which I know, I'm sure it's not that stuff. But and I'm not, it's not that I judge people who build their life around, you know, Game of Thrones and what Benioff and Weiss are going to do next. Like, I know I have some coworkers who are all about that. And it's just, and some friends who they just can't wait for that. I guess there's like another something about dragons thing coming out in the future, and they just can't wait. But I've never seen I've seen half of the first episode of Game of Thrones. I have said winter's coming because I know it's colloquial and the people think it's funny. I have no context for what that quote means. I know that there's something called a red wedding, but I don't know what happens. There's White Walkers. So again, like, I can fake my way out of the conversation and quickly steer it to like Purdue football or something like that, that I can reassert my conversational dominance by shifting it back to sports somehow at the office. But yeah, Game of Thrones, never seen it.
I'm in the same camp. I've watched season one, episode one, four times. I think it's 2 hours long. I need the hook. And I will be the first one to say that I was late to the Breaking Bad party, but then I finally got through like episodes one and two and then maybe three, and it was like hooked. And I've heard the exact same scenario for Game of Thrones, where you've got to get through and that it's worth it because there's all, and I'm just like, I don't know at this point, like, and just looking at Mr. David Benioff's work, like, I didn't know that he had written the novel, The 25th Hour, and then wrote the, you know, the film that Spike Lee directed, which I enjoyed. I didn't know that he had written Wolverine, X-Men Origins Wolverine. Like, those are things I didn't know.
Is he the one that's married to Amanda Peet? One of them is married to Amanda Peet, or is partners
with Amanda
Peet.
That is correct. Yeah, with three children with Amanda Peet. Good
which
for him.
She is an underrated actress. Like, I'll talk about Saving Silverman in future episodes as a guilty pleasure, but she is funny. She is serious. There is a movie that she is in with Jason Sudeikis, Sleeping with Other People, that she kills it in. And at some point we need to maybe do an episode about Jason Sudeikis, because I don't know that we fully appreciated him until Ted Lasso.
And I would be here for it.
We should do an episode on Sudeikis, because I've been riding his fan train for a long time. And I think it's time that the rest of the world is with us, we show that we really were in early on him.
I'm in. I'm all in. And I'm still not going to rush to Game of Thrones either. And I feel like we're just going to be two for two with things that are going to make people angry. So again, connective tissue to the battle this week. I don't think I've seen Tombstone in its entirety, but I know enough to be dangerous, and I know that it's really good. And but watching the Val Kilmer documentary, Val, I was like, oh yeah, his character dies at the end. That's right. Oh, he really filled the bed with ice. Like, that seems like a bit much. but it just made it like, and then Val had all this like home video footage of like just behind the scenes stuff at Tombstone, which was really cool. And like Kurt Russell's just like with a whimsical mustache smoking a cigarette, like not making the best choice, but just sort of like, I like Kurt Russell a lot. And I know that as a 37-year-old man, I should be required probably to watch Tombstone. Certainly a lot easier to watch that than Game of Thrones, because it's one 2.5-hour movie.
The defensive coordinator that I worked for at Morningside College would always, like, what, once a week, somehow he'd fit the, I could be your, I'm your Huckleberry into his conversation. He Tombstone was one of his favorite movies. And he'd always throw medicine balls, like roll them at people, and he could yell, if you could dodge a wrench, you could dodge a ball. And he'd somehow figure out to get Tombstone and Doc Holliday quotes into the...
In my defense, Tombstone comes out in 1993. I'm 10 years old. That's probably why.
I think I saw that in the theater. I really think I saw Tombstone in the theater.
That's outstanding.
I was 12 or 13.
Before we lose any more listeners, because we haven't watched Game of Thrones or Tombstone, or at least I haven't, let's get out of here with some Slappy Pappy and dress socks and Crocs, if you'll have it.
Slappy Pappy, wait, wait.
Dress socks and Crocs.
Stepped on it. This is an opportunity to talk about parenting and life and wins and losses and things that happen in our day-to-day lives and just occurrences. And we both, Joel and I, have three kids and full-time jobs and families. And this afternoon I backed in and scraped my garage door. So I had a long late afternoon at work with volunteering for a food pantry. I was super hot and sweaty. It was about 95 degrees with the heat index, felt like 110 outside. I was trying to back into my garage. I haven't even, and I probably won't even tell my wife this because the garage is fine and my vehicle is fine, but I totally like rubbed it and I freaked out because I've gotten so good at backing into this garage and the house that I've lived in for 3 months. And all of a sudden it was kind of like I have the backup sensor and I could hear it, but I also was listening to a podcast. So I could almost blame this on
driving.
I could blame this on Pod Save America, maybe. But it was like beep, 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 beep. And then I looked and I was like, oh shoot. So I did the thing where you like move forward, back up, and then I slammed my door and I just screamed fart, not that word. And then I was like, what am I doing? Like the vehicle's fine. There's a little like scuff that I just kind of did the old lick your thumb and take it out. But I felt like a schmuck. I felt dumb. But that's life, right?
That's how it goes.
Yes, ain't that a kick in the head if you'll have
that. Not the same song.
That's right.
Whatever.
Same artist?
Yeah, well, they all, that was part of the Great American Songbook, and I'm pretty sure they all sang the same songs at some point. But
they did.
That's a good one. I've done similar things, and it's maddening when that happens. Especially because there's usually a totally good reason. Like you mentioned, you're thinking about, you know, something else or whatever, and you're just on autopilot.
Sweaty. Yeah, I was tired, and then I was like, oh my god, if the garage door doesn't close, it's 5:35. And I'm going to have to call one of the garage guys that we know.
The after hours, like emergency service call.
And we had the garage guys are going to be like, ugh.
We had something Easter Sunday 5 years ago. My oldest son hit the garage door where he was trying to help us unload stuff. And the tailgate on the van was open and it got stuck in the garage. And, you know, here we are Easter Sunday. Can't close the garage door. And can't close the van door, and you know, $3,500 later in the home insurance claim, where we lived in the house for like 3 months. Oh, it was maddening. So yeah, it's the 3 month itch. You hit things with your car, basically, is what
we're
learning.
That's right.
My dress socks and Crocs is that last week was hands down one of the greatest weeks of my life. All three of my children spent the week with their grandparents on the other side of the state of Iowa. And my wife, I mentioned a few weeks on our last episode that she's in career transition. And I'm recording this podcast in my storage room that prior to 10 days ago, I couldn't walk in but for a 2 feet wide L-shaped path that went around.
Wow.
And we had a amazing garage sale, and then we had we unloaded all of the school stuff into her classroom, and I think it was, you know, I've been married for 15 years. I know you and Casey, your wife, have been married for almost 10. Is that right?
Coming up on 9.
Yeah, coming up on 9.
Yeah.
So I honestly didn't remember what it was like just to have that much time where it's just you working as a team. And this is going to sound super sappy and super, you know, schmaltzy, but I forgot how much fun it is just to do projects with my wife with no kids running around, like having to be entertained while we're trying to do a job. Like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't fun work. We worked our butts off, but it's just kind of nice to get those reaffirming things that, yeah, I really like the person that I get to be with every day. So
how many people listening are just like, they didn't have their kids for a week?
Yeah.
Like what? Yeah. Maybe twice it's happened where like all three kids have stayed at my mom's and it's glorious. Like all you want to do is sleep. Like I'll never forget the first time it happened. We were like, we're going to go out to dinner and then we're going to be out late. And it was like 10 o'clock and my wife was like, I just want to go to sleep. And I was like, okay.
And yeah, and it's like
uninterrupted sleep.
We didn't have to get up until 6:45, you know, I go to work at, you know, 7:45. Sure. So it's like, it just, you get to sleep in a little bit. But like I said, we did a ton of work, but it's
smart, man. It's a good idea.
And I can't believe how refreshed I felt. And it's just, it was therapeutic. And I just highly recommend it. If you can figure out a way to send your kids to grandparent camp, we're lucky. Big thank you to my mother-in-law and father-in-law. For that, just, man, it was, like I said, we did tons of work. There was lots of work to be done, but it was just enjoyable. And I love my children. Don't take this as me not liking my kids. I love them to death, but there's just something to be said for not having to entertain. Yeah.
It's good for all parties involved, that's for sure. All right, well, we're gonna get out of here. This week's Buffer Battle pit the Suicide Squad on HBO Max and in theaters. Of course, go to your local theaters against Val, the Val Kilmer documentary on Prime Video. Val advances, and we'll just tease the next episode of the Buffer podcast will feature Free Guy taking on What If from Disney Plus, and that should be interesting.
And I want to make one recommendation. If you've gotten on the Apple Plus train to watch Ted Lasso, which I'm new to the Ted Lasso train and I can't get enough of it. I absolutely love the show. Go to Apple Plus for Ted Lasso. Stay for Schmigadoon. It's so damn enjoyable.
It's pretty good.
Stay for Schmigadoon. You don't like musicals and you even messaged me. You're like, this is actually really good.
I mean, it doesn't hurt that I grew up, you know, with Cecily Strong. But I also
can we get her on the podcast? She was just on Conan. Do you think we can get her on the podcast?
She's making the rounds with her book. I don't know. It doesn't hurt to ask, right?
You did grow up in the same town and like actually have somewhat of a, you know her a little bit.
My best friend Marty from seventh grade on dated her good friend. So I mean, like, she was omnipresent and switched high school senior year. But yeah, Cecily Strong, if you're listening, you can come plug Schmigadoon.
If Cecily Strong is listening, you're one of my favorite comedians of the last 10 years. Your drunk girl at the party and your mom sketches on Saturday Night Live are amazing. So hopefully you're listening.
For us, it's going to be this, they're just me one-on-one going like, hey, do you remember? But then also just finding the publicist. So, all right. Make sure that if you are a publicist and you rep anybody that is enjoyable, to send them our way. And please send your friends and family members and coworkers to the Buffer podcast on Apple, Spotify, and anchor.fm. Joel, we've got another big one on the way and I'm looking forward to it. That's for sure.
Listen to the baseball episode. Field of Dreams game for Major League Baseball is on Thursday. We talk about all things baseball in the baseball episode. I revisited it last week. It's good. Revisited it is a hard sentence to say. I think we're done. Bye.
That's a home run.